Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and we have an exciting segment for you today. We have a full house, and I am very happy to introduce you to Marie Burns, financial advisor and author, and very soon to be host of her own radio show here.
Yay,
at Business Radio X. Yes. Right. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back for the third time.
I was going to ask. Two other times as a guest and today as my special co-host.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we have you to thank for this opportunity. So we'll talk about that in a second. Let me introduce our guests and then let's have you kind of tell how this all came to be and why these specific professionals have joined us.
Awesome.
Yep. So with that, let me introduce you to Marie Smith, President-elect with Financial Planning Association of Greater Phoenix. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here and can't wait to hear from you. Alina Z, President and CEO with the Arizona Council on Economic Education. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thrilled to have you. And Chris Honest, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Senior Manager with Charles Schwab and a former high school economics teacher. Thank you all for making time to join us today. So, you know, if you're listening and you're thinking, okay, we got Financial Planning Association of Greater Phoenix, Arizona Council on Economic Education, we've got someone from Charles Schwab, a financial advisor, former economic high school teacher. What must we be talking about today? And why today?
Sure.
Marie, you want to fill us in?
Time-wise, we are kicking off the fact that April is just around the corner, and April is National Financial Literacy Month. So we wanted to get a little head start in explaining that and why that's important. You and I touched a little bit on this last fall when October, for National Estate and Gift Planning Awareness Month, we were visiting. And the timing of that was I had come out with a couple of books last year around the topic of getting financially organized, thinking about little mini estate planning kinds of things that you can do to help save time, money, taxes, et cetera, for your family. So from that segue in October, I personally was getting more involved with an international nonprofit organization called the Financial Awareness Foundation. And part of their effort is to really try to hit the media in April and October every year as two ways to reach the public and just the population in general about the importance of financial literacy, because we would all agree when we share some statistics here a little bit later that we actually have a financial illiteracy epidemic.
Not just in Arizona, this country.
This is actually internationally. Financial Awareness Foundation is actually an international organization, and they're trying to be a financial awareness advocate, not just targeting one particular population, but internationally within every country. The public, financial professionals, their companies, their employers, their associations, because we're looking at this like a major social problem that is going to take a village, so to speak, internationally to address and improve the lives of people, because finances impact us all no matter what we do, where we live, and what occupation or industry we end up with down the road. So it's sad when we look at the state of affairs as far as in the United States, 70% of those over 70 are on track to run out of money. So that's always a scary worry for most folks. Young people and their families are experiencing excessive debt. I think the 2018 college graduated class ended up with an average of a $37,000 loan balance. Half of our adult population, we've probably all heard this, about 60% of us die without any kind of estate or gift planning in place to take care of whatever we have accumulated over our lifetime and make that efficient and helpful to loved ones, et cetera. So there's a lot of need out there. And so from a global standpoint, the international aspect of the Financial Awareness Foundation was just a passion that spoke to me. And so with April coming up, I thought, okay, well, what about not just the United States, but here in Arizona? And timing-wise, we couldn't have a better fit with the legislature has this amazing bill in process to require personal finance as a part of a high school graduation process. So Elena and Chris will enlighten us on that from the standpoint of what have we had in place? What are we talking about changing and how can we move that forward? And then certainly those of us that are in the industry of financial education. So Murray is from the Financial Planning Awareness Foundation, Financial Planning Association, rather, locally here in Phoenix. So we're just trying to get from a city and a state and a national and an international perspective and hopefully raise the awareness to educate and motivate in the process.
Wow.
Sorry,
No, not at all. That was a perfect introduction. Mic drop, we're done. No. But I want to thank you for having the foresight to say, how can I show up in this conversation? You really hit it for me when we talk about literacy, but you said illiterate. And there's a whole different vibration for my body and my mind when we talk about that. And we need, I think, to use that term to describe how we are showing up to support this knowledge and this acquisition around financial understanding and managing money. And because it really is a thread, as you've taught me, that runs through everything, our health, our well-being, our home, our business, our legacy.
It does. And Murray and I were talking before from a professional standpoint, as we meet with a variety of people from different backgrounds, he was, and I didn't think about this until he said it, recognizing that financial literacy, financial education really helps to level the playing field. Murray, if you want to expand on that.
Yes. Yeah. That's certainly something that I, as an economist, I believe in competition, but at the same time, let's all start from a level playing field. That's personally what I certainly believe in. And I think my actions involving myself with the ACEE and the Marist Challenge, which I'm sure we'll talk about, I want to level the playing field. Right. I think there's so much that can come from once, if you get to the point where there is, I mean, maybe not financial security, but some positive thinking about where you're at in your financial life, you can focus on other things and, you know, that can turn into cures for cancer or other things that, that maybe these folks wouldn't get a chance to spend their energies on if they're focused on living day to day.
Right. No matter where you live, no matter where you go to school, no matter what your family's income is, you should have the basic money tools of personal finance. So
I can tell you, I didn't have it. I still, at 54, I'm still learning and taking more and more responsibility around it. And I have two kiddos who have just recently graduated from ASU and an 11-year-old. And I keep saying to them, and I'd love to change my story, but don't let me be your example because I've made so many mistakes and I haven't had the guidance.
Well, I tell people not to feel guilty because where would they have learned it? They wouldn't. Yep. It's not taught and families are not comfortable enough themselves to feel like they are capable of teaching oftentimes because they didn't get it. So it's like this vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're here to make the change. Marie, can you start by telling us a little bit about the Financial Planning Association of Greater Phoenix and how do you promote financial literacy here in Arizona? Let's start there and then we'll bring everybody else into the conversation as well.
Sure. The Financial Planning Association of Greater Phoenix is a local chapter of a national organization. And it's a professional organization to elevate the financial planning profession of certified financial planners. So certified financial planners are what we think is the gold standard of financial planners. And maybe if I could just go into what it takes to become a certified financial
Sure.
planner, because that I think will give everybody an understanding of this isn't a fly by night type organization or planner. There's a major educational requirement. You need a minimum of a bachelor's degree, plus there are specific courses that you have to take, some education across about 5 or 6 modules, and then you have to pass a case study, actually prepare a plan for a fictional company. And I prepared a case study for the Marist Challenge. So right after I finished my case study for my U.S. CFP, after you get all that, then you can write an exam, sit for an exam. There's a 3-year experience requirement before you can become a CFP. And probably most importantly, or as equal of importance as of the competencies, is the fitness standard. So there are some ethical requirements. There's background checks. There's a code of conduct. There's certain practice standards that we all have to follow. There's a disciplinary structure so that if people aren't following what they should be, there is an opportunity for the stripping of that designation. And then there's continuing education requirements. And in addition, take place, I think, in October of this year, we've expanded to be a fiduciary means. for those that aren't sure what a fiduciary is, it's we must act in the best interest of the client at all times. We've expanded how our engagement, fiduciary engagement, goes. It's any financial advice now, not just financial planning. So that's what it takes to be a CFP. The Financial Planning Association of Greater Phoenix, we promote financial literacy a few ways. We do some pro bono work. We'll talk, I think, about we have a day coming up here where we can help people on a one-to-one perspective. We also do some public awareness, which are presentations to larger groups. And then we also have an advocacy arm, both nationally and locally, where we try to help. And we have a fellow named Matt Benson who's doing a great job working with members of the House and the Senate to push legislation through, or we can be advisors on the legislation, that anything that impacts financial planning in the local area.
Wonderful. Wow. Thank you. And we're going to need to come back to all different aspects of that.
I didn't want
to
take the whole time.
No, I love it. I appreciate just the little the hints here and there, and then we'll circle back. Alina, tell us about the Arizona Council on Economic Education.
Thank you, Karen. So Arizona Council on Economic Education works in the K-12 space, and we're a statewide nonprofit organization. We have reached close to 2,000 schools from kindergarten to high school. And our vision is we want every student to be financially, economically literate. It's such an important life skill. We believe that financial literacy ends poverty. And a recent Federal Reserve study says almost half of American adults have less than $400 in emergency savings. And that's just one paycheck away from homeless. So we're very passionate, and it was founded in, the organization was founded in the 1970s, mm-hmm. and out of the University of Arizona. So a group of faculty members at the university and local teachers, and said, this is such an important curriculum, why is it missing in the schools? So they got together and started developing lesson plans and doing teacher workshops, and started with 10 teachers, 20 teachers, and it just multiplied in many, many schools. And so we have a network of 12,000 teachers in Arizona who have been using our services, free curriculum resources and instruction. So we have come a long way. What many people do not know is that Arizona has personal finance academic standards from kindergarten to high school to be taught. So we actually just had a new standards released by the Arizona Department of Education. For example, in the early elementary schools, they learn needs versus wants, reasons to save or spend money, and where money is from. So in the middle school, it gets more advanced and covering risks and insurance and investments and returns. And so in Arizona, prior to high school graduation, one semester economics class, which includes personal finance, is required prior to high school graduation. So it's the standards is being put out there. However, Arizona is a local control state. So what that means is that every school district decides how it is taught and how rigorous it is to be taught and what curriculum to use. So that's where we have more work. I can talk on and on.
Yeah, I love that you're both chomping at the bit, and that's why we've invited you. Perfect introduction to who you are and how you're serving. I think it was your idea to invite Chris to join us today. Am I right?
Yes.
So can you speak? Thank you. Yeah, I already introduced her just briefly, but what made you think that Chris would be someone that we would want to have in this conversation today?
So Chris is on the board of Arizona Council on Economic Education. She is also a former teacher, and Chris gets it. not only from her personal perspective, but working with the students, now working in the financial service industry with Schwab, she has really seen from the younger age, how important financial literacy is, and then impacting the adults later on in their lives in her current role at Schwab. So, Chris, please feel free to share your personal experiences and observations.
Well, so here goes the rest of the hour.
No, love it.
I'm kidding.
Murray and I will just sit back.
No. I'm kidding. So I've been in the financial industry since 1987. So for a very long time. I say I started when I was five. In 2001, after the tech bubble burst, I guess we can call it that big burst, I was laid off. And so I was reflecting and I said to myself, well, what do I love? What do I really want to be involved with? And I love children. I love this industry. I love economics. And so why shouldn't I be an economics teacher? And that's exactly what I did. So in the classroom, I was in the classroom for a good period of time. Prior to going into the classroom, however, I became acquainted with the Arizona Council on Economic Education. And that's where I started taking advantage of their resources and their professional development so that I could bring those things into my classroom with confidence. Not only that the content was vetted, but that it gave me the right talking points and things like that. Because I knew what I knew, but I didn't know what the kids wouldn't know and that sort of thing. So it gave me that confidence that I needed. What I was very fortunate, I was at North Canyon High School and economics was required for graduation. That's not the same as personal finance, but it was something. And because investing and consumer economics was part of what I had done for so long, I would introduce it in my classroom. And I never let a kid leave my classroom that didn't complete the FAFSA form. I had a computer lab. I made that part of my classroom environment. I showed them my 401k and what it and my 403b and how important it was to save and start as soon as possible. And I made some very, very great connections. The very first Arizona Council event that I had, I was actually teaching three different content courses. I had a community services class, basically, which they don't have anymore. They sort of got rid of that, which is really too bad. I also taught world history, economics, and advanced placement economics. And I cross-pollinated all of that across all of those different contents. And I had a freshman class, which was my contemporary issues class. And I took a small group of students to an Arizona Council on Economic Education event. And it was an event where they learned about just financial fitness and awareness. And they were so motivated by it. Kids that I was involved, they want to know. And they're not really that jazzed about aggregate supply and aggregate demand.
Really? Why?
No, not at all.
Economists aren't even.
Sounds fascinating to me.
But what they want to know is, what do I need to learn? How do I pay my bills? How do I build a budget? What does it take for me to go get a loan? How do I borrow for a car? Just simple things that, you know, we learn sort of the hard way.
And from my own personal experience, having, again, two kiddos who are just now stepping into adulthood and being on their own, and again, admitting that I haven't been the greatest example, nor have their dads. Sorry, guys. I can't help but think that a teacher like you, who plants that seed and encourages that spark and gives them the opportunity to be curious, makes all the difference in the world. Because without that, I don't think kids are naturally curious. Someone's got to kind of guide them and eke it out of them a little bit, right? And if you don't have a parent or a guardian who's doing that for you, or an aunt or an uncle or a neighbor or a teacher, are we truly just naturally curious? I don't know that we are. We've got sports on our mind as a young kid. We've got, you know, maybe some sort of musical instrument, or in today's society, a gaming device. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
Yeah. I take a different tack on that.
Good.
Actually. Yeah. So I do think that they are naturally curious. I have a 5-year-old. Hi, Sawyer, if you're listening. You know, we're trying to I think the issue isn't that they're not curious, but they just never come across these concepts. Like, money is a dirty word, I think, in a lot of homes. So you just never talk about it. So how can you, you know, if there is some curiosity, you can't, the conversation stops. Mm-hmm. So I think there's curiosity there, but they're just not exposed enough and given the opportunity to explore it further. So I think having that opportunity at any age, really, I mean, obviously at different levels is important.
Yeah. We just had a financial fair at this middle school, and it's a simulated life scenario for these students to play out. So every student randomly given an occupation, and they have a paycheck, and they are to decide what to do with the paycheck. So how much they want to spend on rent, on automobile, food, and et cetera. So this one student, he signed a 12-month lease. I'm very excited. I got my own apartment. And then he came around to talk to me. He said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I need some advice. I have no money left for food." So these simulated life situations, it's better that the students learn mm-hmm. before they step into real life.
Right.
And better they learn now. So, and we know that most students do not learn this from their parents. Mm-hmm. And the parents are not able to or don't feel comfortable talking to their children about money. The research says most parents feel more comfortable talking to their children about bullying, drugs, sex. And these are hard topics to talk about than money. Mm-hmm. They will talk about these before money. So we have a family night financial literacy program, bring in parents and their children together and to do activities and learn about money and making choices. So it's really about making the economic way of thinking, making have them get used to making decisions and knowing that every time I make a choice, I have to give up everything else, and that opportunity cost of discipline.
Ben, that's awesome that Arizona already has these dripping on you, if you will, opportunities through grade school and into high school, because some districts across the country, my understanding is they get it in high school for the first time. And we don't learn to read just cold turkey. We have to learn our letters and then we learn to read. We don't learn algebra. We learn addition and subtraction, then multiplication. You work up to it, just like with this financial literacy skill set. So I think the teachable moment, and here's where I'm curious what the Arizona situation is and what you saw with your students. To me, they need to know it right before they're going to apply it, the teachable moment. Like a third of our high school students are going right into the work world right out of high school instead of on to more schooling. So they're the ones that especially need to have it. So if we're requiring it currently, just not maybe detailed saying in your junior and senior high school, is that our current law situation here?
So the local country, so we do have standards from kindergarten mm-hmm. to high school. How it's taught, whether it's taught, that is the questionable area. And we're trying to rectify that. And our state treasurer, Kimberly Yee, has been a fierce champion yes. in this initiative. And last year, a bill was passed, SB 1449, I think, where the bill sponsored by Kimberly Yee was for high school students demonstrating proficiency in personal finance, on their high school diploma, there will be financial literacy seal. Mm. And so this this legislative bill was passed last year. So we're stepping into that direction, recognizing students who have shown the proficiency. And we're working with the Arizona Department of Education implementing it. Now, that's not enough. So Treasurer Yee is championing a new bill, SB 1184, which is to codify the financial literacy education in Arizona schools. So it becomes the law that it must be taught prior to high school graduation. And this bill has passed both Senate and House education committees. It's going through the legislative process. So we're hoping that that is one step in the right direction. And many schools are, you know, some schools are doing more. For example, Peoria School District just came up with a resolution putting financial literacy education in their district as one of the highest priorities. Good. So they have a family night financial literacy program on April 17th, I think, at the Peoria Elementary School.
Excellent.
Involving the community, parents, and children. And like Chris said, our approach in Arizona to teach financial literacy, and we're trying to, given the reality of our education and the limited funding resources, and then also trying to make this subject very relevant to the students, we are introducing the lessons along with multiple disciplinary areas.
Great.
So,
kind of like Chris was describing as well, blending it.
Yeah. So, for example, in the history class, teaching the Great Depression, we will introduce a lesson on budgeting when a family is facing job losses. How do we make it work? And in geography class, you can teach the cost of living in different geographic locations. In civics class, you can teach taxation, and in math class is full of financial literacy applications. So many of the lessons that we have are taking that approach. And we also have a program called the Economics of Sports. Mm-hmm. And that really motivates the curiosity in the students that, wow, athletes, that they make millions of dollars. Why do they make millions of dollars? And why so many of them go broke, you know?
Sure.
And so so these heroes to the students and make it very relevant, and they pay attention and they learn.
Sure. Chris, is that what you found too, as part of the motivation was they wanted to be like somebody, a role model, or more for themselves personally because they will be using it soon, or...
Well, by high school, they're pretty much 100% self-absorbed. So,
yeah, that's a
in a good way. It's a good way, and I mean that in a very good way. Mm-hmm. But you know, they are curious, but they're also, the closer I found that my seniors got to graduation, the more dependent they became. They were scared because it's for real now. This adulting thing is not, it's not going to go away. It's really going to happen, but. You know, I did want to share about one. I have several students. Social media is such a huge
blessing and curse.
I think of it more as a blessing, mm-hmm, because I've been able to stay in touch with many of my students through that, from going back to 2004, my very first class. And one of the students that I brought to the event that I spoke on earlier, his name is Timmy. He'd probably cringe if you heard me call him Timmy now because he's Tim, but. He had this passion and this entrepreneurial spirit after we left that event. And he would always pick my brain. I have this idea. I have this idea. I have this idea. Well, here we are. We've remained in touch off and on. And I'm, you know, he's got his LinkedIn page. And I just want to read this because I think there's more students that are like this if they get exposed as early as possible. And granted, he was exposed as a freshman, but I mean that just really, he was just hungry after that. But on his LinkedIn page, under his profile, he's got a unique experience and set of skills in the finance sector. Finance, entrepreneurship, and marketing have been and will be a long life continued study for me. My success and progress comes from hard work, dedication, and most importantly, all things through his faith that strengthen him. But
wow.
That to me is, I think there are more students out there that if they're exposed, that's the transformation that's going to occur. But, you know, to answer your question, the students were mixed. Some were interested, some were not interested. I could tell the students that had conversations with their parents. I could also tell the really hungry students that wanted to have conversation with their parents. We had a pretty big demographic after the war in Croatia. We had a pretty big population from Bosnia-Herzegovina. And those kids, their parents didn't speak English. Those kids got them to the doctor, paid the bills. Some of them had jobs. They were already adults. And so they benefited sort of from this cross-pollination that I would have for personal finance in my economics, world history in those classes. So I know I've gotten way off track.
No,
but
you're
I
right
think
on.
It's just, you know, it
demonstrates the need and the teachable moment. And
there's so many.
The majority of the population doesn't know what they don't know because it's not been talked about. It's that dirty word. It's that taboo subject. That's why they say a third of adults don't have anything saved for retirement. And when you think from an economic standpoint of, oh my gosh, then how is our country going to help those people financially? We all need to be motivated to fix that situation. So hopefully this is a beginning of that kind of opportunity or the ongoing. There's lots of organizations all around this financial literacy, and we just need to take it to the local level. And the schools are a great, wonderful, amazing place to start.
And I think that larger corporations like Charles Schwab get it. The council's overarching mission is financial literacy. The Charles Schwab Foundation, that's our overarching mission. And so we have this budget. We want to make sure we have an impact. We create these very rich, engaging volunteer events for our employees. Schwab gives every employee 8 hours every year to go out in the community and volunteer. And half of that time must be dedicated to a financial literacy event.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marie, what organizations are you currently working with?
So I personally, when I came here, I mean, the FPA of Greater Phoenix we've got about four or five. Trellis is an organization that helps people when they're buying their first homes. So I've been going and doing the public awareness piece to that. So that's, one-to-many type presentation for basically since I moved to Phoenix. So that's about 4 years. We have done some work with the Junior Achievement to get some folks involved there. We also have Valley of the Sun United Way. That's an interesting one because that's a train the trainer kind of situation. So we train the people that then are going to go out. So we get a multiplier effect on that as economists in this room. I didn't get the spark, Elena, that I thought I would get. But I seem to be missing one here in my notes, but the important thing I think also we do work with these organizations, but we're also very happy to continue to work with other organizations as well. We have a great executive director, Melissa Kemp. If you go to the website and you can get her contact information. She's more than happy to entertain phone calls and talk to folks about how we can get CFPs into the, people that do this on a daily basis into where we're needed. And it doesn't have to be not for profit. That seems to be the place where we have gravitated to. But there's nothing to prevent us from a small business coming in and giving a lunch and learn or something like that where we can increase that financial literacy across everywhere.
To me, that's the other teachable moment is in the worksite where employees are signing forms and making decisions about benefits that they do or don't want or enrolling in the 401k or not. So hopefully that's another audience that we can reach through FPA and otherwise. Murray, do you want to talk a little bit about the April event that's coming up as far as reaching individual consumers?
Sure. Yes. It's Financial Planning Day. It's April 20th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's at the Rio Salado Community College Conference Center, which is 2323 West 14th Street, right about the I-10 and the 143. Registration is not necessary, but it is advisable. You can do that through our website at www.fpaofphoenix.org/event-3023. 3287109. You can also just go to our website and you can find it by scrolling to our calendar. Of importance, though, is if you are coming to this event, there's two signups. There's one for planners to attend, and then there's one for the public. So be careful which one you choose. You'll be able to see it very clearly once you're in there. But pick the public version. You'll enter your contact information, and you can select a preferred start time. You don't have to. You can come and spend the whole time there if you like. But if you do, you must pick an area where you do want some help so that we can at least try to match up folks that are there volunteering to what your specific needs are. And we will have some workshops and some free educational material. But most importantly, I think we will also have 30-minute one-on-one sessions with folks when they come through. So if you do have a specific question, you can get in front of a CFP that will be able to answer it. And I do find with the public awareness work that I do that it's so difficult to get involved on a personal level when you're doing a one-to-many everybody situation. The concepts are broad, but you just don't have time to handle the important questions that people have on their mind. So this event will allow you to get about 30 minutes worth of one-on-one time with a CFP. I just have to say, though, what you won't get, because I think that's just as important as what you will get. You won't get sales pitches. You won't get product pitches. There's no pressure. You also won't get continuity with that planner. We don't give out our business cards there. This is not an opportunity for us to grow our prospective businesses. We're there to provide some initial awareness and so you won't have that continuity. Although you can contact the FPA and you can find a planner after that. In fact, you may be able to request that planner, but they won't be able to give you a card at the event. You also won't get a comprehensive plan in 30 minutes. you're not going to get anything comprehensive. So to really hone down to what's most important, what's keeping you up at night right now would be beneficial to let us know. And then lastly, cost value, and it is a pro bono event. Pro bono means free. And whenever I give my public awareness speaking, I would say, well, then am I going to get what I pay for?
Right.
You get exactly what we would provide for any of our paying clients. Obviously not comprehensively, but the advice is exactly the same. Any of the concepts are exactly the same. So while it is free, you're getting some tremendous value out of that event.
And you're stepping through the threshold outside of fear or avoidance. And taking that first step, it's almost like dipping your toe in the water and going, oh, wow, here's a compassionate person and a knowledgeable person who can help me feel like I'm not crazy or I should be ashamed, right, and guiding me to whatever the next level. So I'm obviously talking from, you know, perspective of somebody who like really doesn't have any planning in place. Granted, this opportunity is for everybody, regardless of where you are on that trajectory. But what a great way to describe the benefit of being there. Wherever you are in this personal journey, you can come and participate and get those questions answered and have someone guide and direct you without the pressure, feeling pressured that, you know, I'm hooked.
Yes.
And have to be locked in with that particular professional.
Excellent. So Saturday, April 20th, Financial Planning Association's pro bono event at Rio Salado Community College in Tempe. One plug for, since we're on the consumer aspect of things, the Financial Awareness Foundation, which that's their website, thefinancialawarenessfoundation.com. Check them out for amazing resources. One of the things I think is helpful to consumers is their 12-month financial fitness plan. It picks two things you could tackle each month of the year to kind of break it down and make it more doable. And then I know we have another local event coming up from the high school education side of things that Elena can tell us about.
Yes, yes. Well, I do want to mention that when I was a practicing CFP, I volunteered at this event. So it is awesome. And people, you know, they're all range of income in different financial situations. And yes, Arizona Council Economic Education is having our annual Mayor's Challenge for Economic Education on April 5th, Friday, April 5th at Mesa Community College. So it's a statewide final competition. There will be three competitions and middle school students, high school students across the state will be coming to compete and demonstrate their knowledge and skills in financial literacy and economics. And one of the competitions that Murray is going to participate in as a judge is the students will play a role as a financial consultant. They will be given an impromptu case, family case, fairly complex with multiple challenges and goals. And so the students will present their recommendations to help this family.
Now, you said this is a final event. Did they have local events prior to this at the schools?
This is a state final. So the participating schools, they have their local different ways to choose, to select their students to bring to the state final.
And this is all kind of above and beyond, not part of a class, but they're doing this extracurricularly,
correct,
this learning,
yes,
and project work. That's,
yes, yes,
motivating.
Yeah, and then it's one of the competitions goes international, so the state championship team will go into the national.
And the mayor's challenge is open to the public. People could come just watch and observe.
Absolutely, we love to invite the community. We'll have about 60 corporate volunteers, and it was so fortunate that the community really supports financial literacy, and people get it. Companies that Schwab and just so many of them in the Financial Planning Association have been wonderful partners. And so many volunteers will be at this event. We love to have more people there to visit, to give feedback, and cheer for the students.
Absolutely. I'm curious, and I'm going to digress a little bit from the local level, and maybe we can circle back to that, but from an international perspective, what either of you have seen financial literacy-wise from student to adult in other countries that maybe we should be learning from here in America, because I understand we're behind both of,
yeah,
these other countries that you might know about.
I'm so glad you asked this question, because just a couple of days ago, my mother sent me this news clip from China. She's living in Shanghai, and they're talking about their financial literacy education for the last 10 years, mm-hmm, and trying to figure out how to do it. And so I think that, you know, China has been growing rapidly over the last 30 years. And so people are building the wealth, but then the income disparity is also showing up. And while in, you know, 40, 50 years ago, the consumers had very few choices, now they have abundance of choices. And with that, there is more personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. The government is not making that choice for you anymore. You have to be responsible. And so I see that financial literacy education is really a necessary product of the prosperity of a country. That, you know, to be more prosperous, we need to have that literacy. I'm glad Murray mentioned the multiplier effect, and I want to emphasize how important preparing the teachers to teach this subject in school it is. And research shows again and again that teacher preparation is so important, because students are not learning from home, and a well-prepared teacher to teach financial literacy in the classroom is really a top priority.
So in China, is it required in school, and are their teachers trained? Anything we can learn from them that they're doing that we aren't yet? Or
it's a new disciplinary area,
oh,
for them. So I think they're just dabbling into it. And when I go to now, through Council for Economic Education, a national network, when I go to the national conference, I see educators from, I think, every national conference I go to every year, probably about 20 countries, will be attending this conference to try to learn how to teach financial literacy.
Okay, excellent. I know the Financial Awareness Foundation is actually gaining a lot of traction in Africa. Mm. And the sheer numbers of population there, they have a major university and apparently a major internet provider that is jumping on board with this whole financial literacy effort, because I mean, there's reasons there from an education and an economy standpoint that the more educated the population, the more successful they are, that just helps the entire economy elevate. So yeah. It's going to be exciting to watch. How about Canada?
Yes, I've been sitting here thinking about it, and I don't think there's anything different from an education perspective. The education that I had, there wasn't any or very much financial literacy there. So I don't think there's much to different between the two. I think we're in Canada, they're likely just as far behind on that potentially, although there's tax system is different and there's more taxation there. And I think maybe they've chosen that social net. So there's a difference there in terms of, you don't have to worry about how you're going to get your health care or be mm-hmm. potentially bankrupted by some sort of sickness or sure. health issue. So that might help, but then I'm thinking, but that's not something that's taught. That's just something that's there, but economic concepts and the rest. I mean, I don't know the school system here well enough to be able to comment, but it sounds like they're very similar. The one thing that I did find in both, and I was very curious actually to get your Elena yours and Chris yours your opinions, but this difference between concept and practicality and this mix, because there seemed to be so much and actually we were talking earlier, Karen, about your foster kids who were on, and that was one of the things that they had said, is that everything seems so easy because it's the concept that's being taught, not the practicality of actually going out and getting these things done. And it seems to me that's what is taught, because that's the easiest of the two to teach, is the conceptual thing or concept versus the practical. So I don't know if that's all right to have some comments on.
Well, I think that Elena described an event where kids are set up. It's a similar event that the Boys and Girls Club have. It's the reality store, right? So they go in, they are given a particular scenario. They're a single mom, two kids, et cetera. And then they go to the banker and they actually start making it practical. So that doesn't exist in schools, and I don't think those programs are big enough yet to make the kind of impact that we need to transition from conceptual concepts to practicality. But I think it's a really good way to start exposing kids to start thinking practically instead of thinking just conceptually, to be able to take a test.
My fifth grader just did junior achievement this year, and he got to be the mayor. And actually, he was so cute. He said, we get to pick what we want. And if we don't get our first choice, and they'll have, they'll find something for us. And he's like, maybe I should be the CEO of the bank, because I really want to be the mayor. And if I don't get picked for that, then I'll get to be the mayor, right? He's already critical thinking, trying to strategize. My point in sharing this right on the tails of what Chris is sharing, he loved that day.
Yeah.
And really came home with this sense of pride and understanding of how everything worked in this little, mini town in a sense. And yet, what else is being done in the classroom and through the rest of the year? Because there's so many competing priorities in the curriculum from a teacher's perspective. So while it was fun and exciting, everybody knows junior achievement and the BizTown, that thing. What next? How do we keep these experiences rich and palatable for these kids, not only fifth grade and elementary, but also middle school and junior high and high school? And, yeah. And I'm looking at the right people to ask that question to, and we're getting and having legislature with that expectation. That's the first step. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Elena, a couple of times, we have the standards, but standards are just that. If we leave it at the local level and everybody gets to decide how and when they're going to attack that, we're really not being held accountable as seamlessly as we could be. And then the next piece of this is the curriculum development. So, okay, so now we've passed this expectation that this is part of what we're teaching. Now the next layer of concern is, how do we not only get the curriculum and these experiences in the hands of these students, but training the teachers?
Yes. And I mean, teachers have that multiplier effect. If you have one teacher well-trained, they can reach, you know, for high school, 300 students.
Chris is a perfect example.
A year. Mm-hmm. And every year after that, 300 students. And then they also share best practices with other teachers. So that cross-pollination and going into the students of thousands of other students and taught by other teachers. So give a little bit of perspective of Arizona versus other states. And in personal finance education, Arizona is one of the 17 states requiring every student to take a personal finance course prior to high school graduation. So one of the 17, and it is, as you know, taught as part of the high school economics class in our social studies curriculum.
But that's if we're choosing that as an elective.
It is actually required.
So what's new about
Arizona,
this existing law then? What's the
law,
the new tweak?
The law codifies that academic standard. So make it into the law, which makes it a mandate that it cannot be changed, you know, in any way.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that research actually showed. States with a financial literacy education mandate, they track these students, mm-hmm. And look at their behavior, and they find that the students actually do make better borrowing choices. So they tend to have lower cost of their financing. So there is so the mandate does make a difference. And we are one of the few states requiring the teachers to be highly qualified to teach economics and personal finances. So the reality is the national number says that only 20% of the teachers who are supposed to teach this subject feel comfortable and confident teaching it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work around teacher training and certification. But what we are not in the lead nationwide is only seven states nationally require testing. So it is one thing to say you need to take this class, but it's another thing if it's tested, like how math and English are tested. So like Colorado, Texas, Georgia, they have testing. So we're not that year yet, and that's a whole different conversation.
It's a great start. I'm hopeful.
I just want to chime in just very quickly is that I know that there's likely a lot of members in the FPA that have the ambition to help in that situation, right? Like go into the schools or go into with the teacher. I don't know what it looks like, but I know that there's probably people that would be helpful, and you're getting, you know, the training from the people that live it every day.
Yeah, we seek powerful collaboration between the teachers and industry experts to support the students. And Chris is coaching some students on the stock market game, talking about making it real for the students. Mm-hmm. And they are given a portfolio for a whole school year and to invest in real companies with real stock information. So. And they come as classroom guest speakers, so as to share real relevant information, and it is powerful when we have it working from the teacher side, from the community volunteer experts side, and from the parents, bringing them to help them feel more comfortable working with their children.
That's a great combination. I know the Center for Financial Literacy had listed 5 keys to high school financial literacy, 5 keys to success. And so in the last 5 minutes, I'll just share those. And it sounds like Arizona's really on track or already has some of these in place. One is that it's required as a graduation requirement. Sounds like we already have that. We're just making it more likely to happen consistently with this new law, if I'm understanding correctly. Mm-hmm. Secondly, is teacher training is critical, which again, the Arizona Council on Economic Education is seeking to provide that, and maybe there's some more collaboration with FPA that can help to support that and other organizations. Thirdly, funding. And I'm guessing that's the one little trip up that, because when I heard this is in the legislature again, I thought, great, what is there to think about? This should just fly through, and it should be a unanimous vote. But I'm sure there's funding to provide that there are these classes in all high school students that maybe is the biggest challenge to yes. the passage. The fourth key to success is standard assessments, just as you said. And whether that's at the national level or what level, is there an assessment in place right now in Arizona? It's required, but is there an assessment?
Yeah, not at the state level and varies district by district. Some districts have it.
Okay.
Some don't.
Okay. And then the last one is that educators obviously need access to quality curriculum, which again, it sounds like the Council on Economic Education has that one pretty nailed down, if I'm understanding correctly. Awesome.
Yeah. You're right on.
Awesome.
We could go for another hour or two, couldn't we? Yeah. Hopefully with the opportunity to have Marie spending more time here at Business Radio X, we'll have this as an ongoing priority and conversation. As we round out the show today and close up, I would love for each of you to have an opportunity to, give our listeners an opportunity to get to know how they can get in touch with you, either personally, maybe LinkedIn or something like that, and also equally important, the organizations that you represent today. And then either a lasting thought, maybe, something to share that you hadn't thought to share previously, or how folks can get involved, kind of a plea. This is Business Radio X, so we do have professionals that tends to be our listening audience. How can an individual, a professional, and or a company, an organization, private or public, get involved? I know that's a mouthful, but I'll make sure you get everything in. So, Chris, would you be okay starting for us first?
Okay, where do I start?
Yeah, right. So a lasting thought, little nugget of wisdom.
Yeah, okay. I think that the nugget of wisdom is, parents out there, talk to your students, teachers. I can't tell you how gratifying it is to sit and listen to my team of 10-year-olds talk about economic, environmental, and social sustainability for companies. That's what we talked about last Saturday. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. So if parents can talk to teachers so that teachers can get these resources in their classroom, I think that's my lasting thought. To get in touch with me, I work for Charles Schwab. My name is Chris Honest. I'm on social media, LinkedIn. My last name is A-N-E-S-T. Feel free to ping me.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you so much for giving your time. And you were kind of our last minute. Woohoo! Yeah. Guess what? Elena's bringing Chris. She showed up today like, okay, I'm not sure why I'm here, but I know I'm going to play a role. And you most certainly have. So thank you.
Thank you.
Marie, how about you? A little golden nugget of wisdom or a plea to our listeners to get involved?
Well, yeah. And I certainly with a young child at home, that's where this goes. And I think that we tend to treat kids as adults from a behavior perspective, but we don't treat them that way on an intellectual perspective. And I think that if we start doing that more, that curiosity, whether it's financial literacy or whatever, we're just going to be better off because of that. I think we don't give our kids enough credit and what they will take on and what they're capable of at various ages. You can reach me through the FPA of Phoenix website, fpaofphoenix.org. And then I am also on LinkedIn, Marie Smith. And I work for Keith Connolly, which is a cross-border financial planning firm. So I do live in both countries, work-wise, I guess.
Wonderful. Yes. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Invest in financial literacy in education, and funding is critical, like Marie said. And I envy my colleagues in other states, because there is a state council like ours in many other states who receive public funding support. And Arizona Council of Economic Education is 100% privately funded. So from individual donors and corporate foundations, and we're very grateful. Invest and volunteer to be on our speakers bureau and coach students on a curriculum like what Chris is doing. You can reach us on our website. Our contact information is there. It's azecon.org, A-Z as Arizona, E-C-O-N as economics.org.
Thank you. Really, you all have been phenomenal. And as we close out, I want to thank Marie Burns for making sure that we had this conversation right before we launch into Financial Awareness Month. Is that the right term, Financial Literacy Month?
Exactly.
Yes. And if you could please let folks know how they can stay in touch with you as well.
Sure. I'm going to put a plug in for Paper Lifesavers, which is where you and I started last fall, trying to help consumers just narrow it down and cut to the chase, get financially organized. Once you know what you have, you can work on moving forward from there. So finances are the number one stress in America. So if you can start walking the talk yourself, my before financial checklist is one way to do that. The Financial Awareness Foundation has multiple other resources, so check that organization out as well. And from the nonprofit standpoint, anywhere you can put your money where your mouth is and contribute to these kinds of organizations that are doing amazingness in the world, you are blessed.
Wonderful. Thank you all again for being here. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.